Well, encountering Jesus has a transforming effect. He offers release and restoration to even the most troubled and broken of people. His words make clean the unclean and restore the broken. And he undoes the destruction brought by the devil in Genesis chapter 3. And as Mark writes his gospel account of Jesus, he wants to point out that Jesus is God's chosen king. And that as king, he has come into the world with authority. And in the opening line of his account of Jesus' life, Mark writes that Jesus having authority is good news. And in earlier chapters, Jesus has displayed this authority. He's proven that he has transforming authority over sickness. He has powerful authority to teach. And immediately preceding tonight's chapter, Jesus displays astonishing authority over the created world around us. The very visible, audible, and tangible world. The water of a great lake. The wind of a great storm. Threaten to drown those whom he is traveling with. And Jesus calms them with a few words. His authority is indeed good news to those who encounter it. And in chapter 5, we see that Jesus has authority over something unlike the storms and the waves, something that often goes unseen, a power of darkness that at times is completely unrecognized. And as we look at these words together, we will see that the work of demons is real and powerful. The work of demons is real and powerful. Jesus restores where demons destroy. And we have good news to share. We have good news to share. The work of demons is real and powerful. Bubbling up time and again as we work through Mark's gospel, this account of Jesus' life, there are demons. According to the Bible, these are spiritual beings aligned with the devil against our good and loving God. The Bible is clear that there is an unseen and spiritual realm. And here, in this unseen dimension of the world in which we live, there is a battle. The devil and demons have chosen to pit themselves against God and all that God has made, all that he loves. The Bible is also clear that the evil and the brokenness in the world around us come from the devil, his demons, and their work. That is their origin. Now, perhaps you think, it's 21st century. We live in post-enlightenment, royal Tunbridge Wells. This is a bit odd. The story of Legion in our Bibles is a bit awkward. Surely we don't go in for all this, you might think. Well, if that is how you're thinking, perhaps the movie The Usual Suspects gets it spot on when it says the greatest trick the devil ever played was convincing the world he doesn't exist. But as Christopher Ash pointed out when preaching here in January, we've surely all experienced things, surely brushed up against things that go beyond the explanation of the world around us without this unseen reality. Surely the horrific abuse by those who are supposed to be in positions of love and care. Perhaps it's the self-destruction of one ravaged by an addiction of one kind or another. The horrors that destroy the individual and those around them. And even if not in our personal experience, surely we've all read of the great atrocities of the world, perhaps the accounts of those from the Soviet Gulag. Confronted by darkness and evil on this level, Surely we see that there must be things lying beyond what we can see. There must be things behind the physical. And the biblical worldview offers us concepts of good and evil, of spiritual, of demons. And these things will help us make sense of the world we see. And wonderfully, the Bible also offers us a cure for this brokenness and this evil that is beyond what any mere human can do. The restoring the world, releasing it from the power and darkness of demons. That is a work only God can do. We can and we should do real good through social action, through medical intervention. By it we can help, we can love, we can serve people. But ultimately we must bring them a spiritual answer to their problems. We must bring them the truth of Jesus, the one who in this chapter proves that he has the power to crush the work of the devil and his demons. All of this is the backdrop of tonight's scene. As we enter chapter 5, in verse 1, we're thrown into the deep end of this biblical worldview. Jesus has crossed the Sea of Galilee in chapter 4. By the power of his words, he has calmed a storm that threatened the lives of the professional fishermen with whom he sailed. They get off the boat, and typical of Mark's fast-paced account of the life of Jesus, immediately the next thing happens. We're introduced to a man. But this is no ordinary man. He'd have had quite a striking Instagram bio. Look at verses 3 to 5. He lives in a graveyard, potentially naked. He passes the time breaking chains with which others have tried to bind him. He screams into the night, and in his darkest moments, he cuts himself with sharpened stones. What has led him to this terrible place, this nightmare of existence? Well, Mark 5, verse 3, tells us that he has an unclean spirit. A henchman of the devil lives in him. He is full of a dark spiritual power that is separate from him, but is in him and leading him to this sorrowful and destructive behavior. It is a sad and distressing scene, isn't it? But it's a scene that reminds us that the work of demons is real and powerful. And presumably this man had a family, parents at least, and perhaps siblings, maybe even a wife and children. Yet, here he is cast out into an unclean part of town, cut off from community, from love, from care. His dwelling among tombs is a dark and a gothic experience by our understanding, but even worse, in a time and a place where such a place made you unclean, far from religious observance. In addition to that, the nearest activity to him is something else which seems to be unclean, the farming of pigs, used in the story of the prodigal son in Luke's gospel as an indication that this man is on the outside. And here, this man again is cast from society, from interaction with his own people, far from those who love him. So his life is full of misery and pain and suffering, compounded by the fact that he is cut off from the care and support for which he most probably longs. This powerful, unclean spirit has made him a prisoner. Now, speaking to those from our church involved in Tunbridge Wells Church's street teams, the soup bowl, the winter shelter, I am reminded that our own town has its share of people like this, living where no one would want to live, cut off from family, spiraling in destructive patterns of behavior, desperately lonely and afraid. And I'm fairly sure that the number suffering in such darkness is not limited to those sleeping rough in our streets. And I'm not saying that all of that is directly caused by demons. But some of it probably is. And remember, all brokenness, sickness, and suffering comes from the work that the devil began back in Genesis chapter 3. The work of demons is real and powerful. So, with this backdrop established, what happens next? Jesus restores where demons destroy. This man needs an answer. And as the story enters verse 6, a confrontation is established. This metal-crushing tomb dweller squares up to Jesus, God's authoritative king. What is going to happen? No one has been able to help him so far, it would seem. His family, doctors, they don't appear to have been able to help. Chains and fetters have not been able to subdue him. Why? Well, because they are not strong enough to deal with the real and powerful work of demons. And because this man has a spiritual problem and needs God to bring him a spiritual answer. So what happens when the demon-filled man squares up to Jesus? Well, in verse 6, he falls on his knees before him. And the demon inside the man pleads with Jesus. This demon, whose power has enabled this man to break chains, is instantly brought to his knees. Jesus speaks. He asks the demon his name. And here we see further into the depths of this man's suffering. For it appears he is not troubled by one, but by a legion of demonic influence. And look how clear the demon is on what is going on here. It knows in verse 6 that Jesus is God's son. He knows that his authority comes from his divinity. And the demon also knows that Jesus is in charge. And he asks not to be sent away or tormented. And in verse 13, he can only act on the permission given by Jesus. Whilst this man has been embattled with the power of legion, Jesus completely and utterly turns the tables. This confrontation isn't a penalty shootout. We don't have to guess which team's going to win. It is over before it even really begins. Now, one place where people might get caught up in this story is the pigs. Right, and perhaps those vegans and vegetarians amongst us might find this a particularly distressing biblical scene. But I think in part the point of this incredible scene, where what was in the man enters the pigs, shows us a little snippet of what was going on inside this man. Why do I say that? Well, look what happens to those pigs. A herd of 2,000 pigs, when affected by the legion who was once in this man, they instantly rush into a lake and drown. The man we saw beside himself in verses 3 to 5, alone, broken, crying out, in complete disarray, had this destructive power inside of him. He truly was in trouble before he met Jesus. Before Jesus wielded his authority. Before Jesus spoke. And yet look at the transformation. Jesus restores where demons destroy. The man whom no one could help is now sitting down calmly, back in his own mind, back in his own clothes, and having a conversation with Jesus. The herdsmen run off, probably not best pleased that their source of income is dead in a lake. And when they return with their mates, they are shocked by what they see. This man, whom they seen earlier in the day screaming from the tombs, able to tear off metal chains, cut off from relationship, is now transformed. He is restored, and wonderfully now in the best relationship, a relationship with Jesus, with the God who made him and has saved him. How incredible must this have been? In fact, it's so incredible it freaks them out. They see in some way the power and authority of Jesus. And in verse 15, they were afraid, just as the disciples had been afraid when Jesus stopped the raging seas with a rebuke. Meeting a king and seeing the power he has instills fear. Even in our own constitutional monarchy, what do people do when they meet the queen? They bow down. And I imagine, even without consciously thinking about it. And this king has far more power beyond our head of state. He has complete power over all things, the seen and physical, the unseen and the spiritual. Yet not everyone in the story is afraid, are they? The man who was tormented by legion knows that the power and authority of Jesus brings good news. It brings freedom and new life to the broken and to the marginalized. He is calmly sat, having what must have been one of the greatest conversations of his life. He has met the Savior who has power over demons. He has experienced that Jesus restores where demons destroy. He has seen and experienced the power of Jesus' words. Jesus spoke, and the demon left him. And what wonderful news, then, that in our Bible, we have the powerful, life-giving, demon-defeating word of Jesus. Get it open. Meet him. Experience his power and authority, and experience restoration and new life. Jesus can change and restore people now and ultimately promises that when he returns, he will restore all those who trust in him. Suffering, sadness, death, all the troubles brought by the devil and demons will be a thing of the past for those who trust in the transforming power and authority of Jesus when he returns. But look how, in the ensuing moments, they show us just how different people's reactions can be. And how different people's reactions to Jesus always will be. There are two camps, and we're all going to belong to one or the other. As Giles pointed out to me when we were talking about this story the other day, there have been, and always will be, people who like pigs more than Jesus. Many saw the drama unfold. And many of them are now desperate for Jesus to leave. Despite this wonderful miracle, despite this beautiful restoration of this man, they just want him gone. Jesus' words of authority have transformed this man, and they want nothing to do with that transforming power. And it seems Jesus is willing to oblige. He is mentioned as instantly getting back into the boat that brought him here. Yet on the other side of the equation, the man, once plagued by legion, is desperate to remain close with Jesus. Look at him. He wants to get back in the boat with Jesus. Yet what does Jesus do? He says no. He says, don't come with me. Not in an unloving way. This is not rebuke or resentment. He sends the man on a mission. This man was broken, naked, and unclean. This homeless, nameless, and purposeless man is given a whole new identity. He is now restored and clothed and now has a mission. And what is it that Jesus wants him to do? In verse 19, it's pretty simple. Go home to your friends and tell how much the Lord has done for you. Jesus wants to send this man out as quite possibly the first missionary gospel worker. Yes, Jesus will later send his disciples and others. And he sends us out into the world to share the good news of his kingdom. But here and now he sends this man. And note what he wants him to tell his friends. What the Lord has done for him. Jesus wants him to go and share the good news of Jesus' power. Not complex doctrine. Not endless stories of what it was like to be demon-possessed. Not to go and do incredible works. But just go and speak. Tell this wonderful story that we've read tonight. Why? Because he has good news to share. The great news that Jesus had the power and authority to set him free. To go and tell them that encountering Jesus has a transforming effect. And Mark records for us what this man went on to do. It would appear he didn't limit himself to reaching his friends back home. Not just his best mates. No, he went through the Decapolis. That is the 10 cities of the region. Telling everyone who'd listen about his encounter with Jesus. He has been utterly transformed by this encounter with the power and authority of Jesus. And he just can't help telling people about it. He goes home and tells his friends, as Jesus said, and then he travels to 10 cities, telling everyone. And what a wonderful example of sharing our faith. When I think about sharing my faith, I think I sometimes get worried that people might not understand that God is three in one. Or people might be confused why I read a book that's thousands of years old. But instead, I should just think, we have good news worth sharing. When we speak to our friends about Jesus, we can be telling them what Jesus has done for us, dropping into conversation about his restoring work in our lives, letting our friends know that Jesus changes everything and following him could change them, that he has the potential to help them wherever they are at, that wherever they're struggling, he will be there. However isolated they feel, he will bring them in. However broken, unclean, and far off they might see themselves, meeting Jesus could transform them. Hearing the words of Jesus can turn their life upside down. Go and tell them. Go and tell them what the Lord has done for you. Go and tell them that meeting Jesus will have a transforming effect. Go and tell them that he offers release and restoration to even the most troubled and broken of people. We have good news worth sharing. Good news that whilst the work of demons is real and powerful, Jesus restores where demons destroy.